Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you are, you know, tired, irritated, or you just need something, or you need love, then go down and have a hot dog. it's comfort food.
God, I need a lot of love in my life now.
That's so true.
So if you try, can you tell them?
Yeah.
Can you tell them? So this is a typical one, I think, which you see Denmark in the 80s. And this is when I grew up in Denmark. This is what I love about Denmark. And this is why I've never really moved away from Denmark.
Hi, I'm Helen Holliman, Editor-in-Chief of Munchies, and welcome back to the final installment from our Copenhagen series of Munchies, the podcast. Today, we're super lucky to be talking to An Li, chef extraordinaire and Denmark's unofficial ambassador for Vietnamese food. Okay, so you might not have heard of her, but An Li is totally famous over here. She's got cookbooks, TV shows, and some of the most successful restaurants in the country. Whenever Vietnamese food comes up in the Danish media, An is your go-to expert, and she has this enduring mission to teach Danes the magic of fish sauce. Today, she's taking me to a grill bar similar to the one that she grew up working in. Then we're going to swing by her house into her backyard garden to learn just how delicious Vietnamese via Scandinavia can actually be. Approximately 8,500 Vietnamese live in Denmark today. And in a country of nearly 6 million, that makes up about 0.001% of the population. Many Vietnamese found their way here in the wake of devastation following the Vietnam War. An was one of these refugees. Born in Vietnam while the worst of the conflict was still ongoing, her parents fled the threat of starvation and forced labor and made the treacherous journey across oceans in the late 1970s. The Danish have a specific name for these immigrants. They call them boat people. Her family initially settled in the northern reaches of Denmark and followed the tradition of so many immigrants worldwide. They saved everything they could, opened a restaurant, and began cooking really damn good food. But back then, Scandinavia wasn't ready for Vietnamese cuisine. So they opened what the locals called a grill bar, basically the quintessential Danish sausage stand. This is where An got her start in cooking, working with unfamiliar flavors in a new world completely away from home. Finally, in 2003, she and her family opened Lele in Copenhagen, a restaurant that serves up modern interpretations of her family's traditional food, and it matches the Vietnamese technique and flavor profiles with fresh Nordic produce and ingredients. It is absolutely delicious. It became very successful, and the food that she serves up there has endeared her with the hearts and the stomachs of the Danes.
Wait, so what is the classic hot dog to get here?
I would say that the one is with the red sauces. It's a
really?
Classic, no, a classic for all the children in my age. When we grow up, we have the red sausage, Danish summer house, and the beach. This is what I see Denmark.
Can you remember when you first tried a Danish hot dog?
That's Lars Hinnerskov Eriksen, our Munchies Denmark editor.
Yes, actually, I was 6 years old. I arrived in Denmark when I was 5 and a half, coming as boat people in '79, and then. We have this contact family where they find a Danish family, very typical Danish family. And during summer, they take us, or Christmas, they take them home and we learn to eat, you know, Danish rødgrød, you know, the porridge, the sweet thing, and sausage, hot dog. So when I go to the summer house during the summer in Blokhus or Løkken in the north of Denmark, then they serve all these red sauces. And it looked very, very poison. I mean, it's very red. But it tastes fantastic. There's a lot of umami in sauces with a lot of ketchup. Would you like the red hot dog for you?
I'll have whatever you're having.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to do like a A red hot dog, like a boiled red sausage in a hot dog. Yeah. Wow, I haven't had that for a long time.
Yeah, but we should try.
Just get it roasted.
But what you don't know is actually I grew up in a grill bar for 17 years. When I was 12 years and my mother took education, what I call kitchen assistant, she couldn't find a job after, so she opened this fast food grill bar that was actually 400 square meters. And I'm the best to make hot dog. If you ask me to make 20 or 30, I can do that. And burgers, french fries, all the fast food. And the fast food are actually the best when you need, you know, you have the needs. And from then, you add all the healthy things, and then you change slowly. But there's always a time for fast food. I and my brother say that we want to teach the Danes how to eat Vietnamese. And everybody say, you're crazy. Fish so smelling. And how can you put them to eat all the greens? Because 14 years ago, when you get green, it's like a piece of parsley on your grilled beef, and that's it. Nothing else. So every day we were standing in front of customers for the first 1 year, explaining how to put coriander, how to do fresh summer rolls, how to put the herbs on the salad, and eat it. But we throw a lot away. But slowly it came, and now most of the Danes know about Vietnamese food and herbs.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm trying to think back, sort of, we spent the last 10, 15 years talking about Nordic cooking, and that's become a thing, like people can relate to that. Yeah. But when you open up Lily, your restaurant, I can't think, I didn't live in Copenhagen at the time, but surely there was not much in terms of Vietnamese food
around. There was nothing. There was one, it's in the Nordhavn, and they called Vietnam, but actually he made a bit Chinese food, and he made some Vietnamese, but not 100% like we did, like with fish sauce and all that. And the thing is that we thought, my brothers and I, we are actually quite passionate about, you know. We don't have any clue about restaurant, except working in this grill bar. But we just want people to eat Vietnamese and introduce the Vietnamese culture the way that we saw when we went back, and not the story about, you know, Vietnam War and all that. And somehow the Danish are actually very, very much trendsetter, because you have Thai food that's popular, Chinese and Japanese. And when Vietnamese food came, people was actually more than ready. But the problem was that at that time, 14 years ago, there was not a lot of social media. So it's like word by mouth, and people are telling, and you have this different area where hipster are coming, and it was fantastic with hipster. But, you know, now everybody, you know, like you say, the woman who sells hot dogs, she know about fish sauce. And I keep talking fish sauce, you know, and people say, are you not stopping fish sauce? I said, no, I need to repeat it Vietnamese until you know it by heart, like Italian food. And now most people, know. And it takes a lot of work. And you need to tell the same story again, and you need to make it positive, funny every time. And I still like it. But the thing is that the wave when we came is that green is healthy, and we ate a lot of green, so it's something natural for us. But now with all this sustainable, everybody thinking green, so we are still popular. But what I want to do is that I want them to eat more than green, not like juice, but herbs, putting herbs in everything. You know, herbs, because herbs are much more healthy than green vegetables. There's a lot more vitamins, there are a lot of other things inside. And I say 14 years ago, I want people to be aware of Vietnamese food, but now I want everybody to be aware of Vietnamese food. Even I have to tell this story in English or in German or whatever, I want to repeat noodle salad, herbs, Vietnamese food, pho, as you know it. I mean, Vietnamese food is very popular in the United States now. And in London, it starts slowly. Mm. But the awareness is actually better in Scandinavian than in France, and then in in Germany. It's just because you need to tell the story. You need to show.
You mentioned just there that you worked, when you came here, you worked in a grill bar, which for the uninitiated is a very sort of traditional Danish fast food place with hot dogs, chips, fried food and burgers. And that must have made you so skeptical and distrustful of food in this country.
Not really, because you could say in this way, I was raised with Vietnamese food at home, and I know there was a lot of thing in it. And when I was 12, I read a lot of books, you know, about Miller, Henry Miller, when he was in Paris, and when he described the food, French food, I already at that time ate oyster, caviar, truffle, or whatever in the books. And I thought, there's a world there. How can we get it here? And at that time, there was only agurka salad, cucumber salad, cabbage in Denmark. During the 80s, Denmark had a crisis, so everybody was very poor, and we didn't have a lot of choice. But I knew the taste was there, so how can we get it? And somehow my first trip was actually to Washington, D.C. I was au pair in 92, and I went both to Washington, D.C., New York at that time, and in L.A., and that was amazing. My first burritos, I mean, and Jewish, you know, kosher food was fantastic. All kind of food, and you see all this mixes. And at that time, during the 92, it was different than now. I say, if it's possible in the United States, it should be possible in Denmark. But how can you do that? But at that time, I was too young. So I went back, study, and went back to Vietnam. And I fought, and I worked in France as flight attendant for 4 years, traveled all over Europe. And I say, I want Vietnam to come to Scandinavia.
Your sort of relationship with Vietnamese food and your points of reference in terms of spices, dishes, was that built up before you came to Denmark when you were a child?
No, because I was actually a very, very difficult child concerned food. I was very, what you call, kresen, picky. And I ate the same 10 dishes, that would say the Danish leverpostej pate, or even rice and salty meat and vegetables, and that's it. I never had a dairy product. I didn't like it. It was too fat. I didn't like sweet things. And I actually discovered food, and that's very beautiful. I knew all the tastes. My mother said, this is serving, and you eat it or not. But my fascination for food actually started when I came to the United States, and there's all these choices. I mean, I never saw so many multiple culture in one place and different food. And somehow I was very obsessed by food, even though I didn't eat it. And it's, I think each food has its own culture. And I think when growing up in Denmark and see all the Danes.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Blonde hair, blue eyes, and I was different in a small country, so I thought I was looking for my roots, but I couldn't find it. And I couldn't find any stories in Vietnam because there was no book about Vietnam. So in the United States, I saw all these different people. Some look like me, some look different, but they have darker skin, they have different colors. And not only, you know, white people, like we see in Denmark, there wasn't white people. I mean, you don't even see a black person in the north of Denmark when I was young. So I was so fascinated. And then the taste of the food is amazing. And I have a very, I can smell things very strong and I can taste thing very strong. So I realized when I came to United States that all this color, all this food was amazing. And I started to eat. And in 6 months, I gained like 12 kilos for a small Asian girl. And then I came back to Denmark and said, well, the world is full of a lot of things. So I decided I want to travel. So I chose all my next travel was in Vietnam. I thought I need to find my roots. And that was then I discovered Vietnamese kitchen in all its shape. In 95, I went back for 3 months and stayed there for 2 years.
And you're saying before that you knew you had oysters, you had truffles. You didn't really, but you got it through the Henry Miller books.
Books, exactly.
Which you found in the local library?
Yeah. And that was beautiful because in many ways in Denmark, you had a lot of things. That's the welfare system. And this is why I love Denmark so much, in the good and bad shape, but mostly all the good things. And there is opportunities. Maybe people don't see it, but if you have been in a poor country with war or different, you realize and you appreciate much more. So for me, I saw I was different. I couldn't understand. I went
through a trauma that I didn't know I had, because I saw a lot of pirates, I saw people who got, you know, killed and different things during this 2 weeks on, actually more than 2 weeks on boat, and a lot of hard things that a child should not see. And I didn't know I have all these sorrows in me. But I hide myself in the library and reading all these stories. And the librarians, they told me, you know, this book are not for you. You are too young. But I keep reading. And they actually, at the end, they found books for me and said, you should read this and this. And I actually vacuum all the libraries in for the books about, you know, all the cultures. And Henry Miller hit me, especially with the story when he was in Paris with Anne Nin. And when he went with no money, when he had money, he just ate food. But another thing is that many other books, when they wrote about food, is so amazing.
Tell me about the first meal that you had when you returned to Vietnam, and how did it make you feel?
So I went to Vietnam, and my aunt, my mother's sister, she took me on the motorbike. I was sitting behind and saw all this, you know, noise with the motorbike. And at that time, Vietnam just opened, so people were very poor, and they can spot that I'm not a local Vietnamese, the way I dress, the way I talk. It's not like I'm bling-bling, you know, shining, but I just walk different and talk different. And she brought me to this breakfast place where she have, where you either have the noodle soup for breakfast, and then you have this fried eggs, the Vietnamese French way, where you have the pate homemade, you have the sauces, but you have the chili sauce, you have a green salad with a lot of herbs and tomato. And she say, what do you want? And I say, what is good? And she say, both of them. So I say, well, I want both of them. So the first one was the noodle soup. It came in a big bowl of noodles cooked on shrimp, you know, and what called the crab. And then you have tomato inside, you have a lot of vegetables and herb, and it's a lot of fermented, shrimp paste. It was amazing good. I was sweating, but the only thing I could concentrate was the noodle. And I was eating, and I didn't, you know, care. We were sitting on small chairs and sweating a lot, but it was the best bowl of noodle I ever had. And then feeling that you're home, but even though people don't understand you. And then secondly, this fried egg come, and I say, well, this I know, you know, there's no different. I mean, everybody have fried egg and bacon in Europe. But the way they serve it, you know, it was like still frying on the pan. And then they put all this chili, they put the green salad with the vinegar inside. It was so fresh. And in a way, it's, you know, something you know, but how can it taste so good? Amazing. And then I decide I want to eat, and I was not picky anymore. I mean, in the United States I was still, but then in Vietnam I just gave up. When you go there, you have to try. So I mean, some of the most crazy thing I have tried is actually in Vietnam when I was young.
So tell us about when you were a flight attendant, you know, going back and forth. And do you think that helped you become a restaurateur in certain ways, in terms of the skills that you acquire having to deal with neurotic people 30,000 feet above?
I would tell you, I didn't know I was a feminist until I became flight attendant. It's the most, what do you call, sexist. I mean, the way they think about women is horrible. I mean, it was interesting. I didn't choose to be flight attendant because I dreamt about it, but I couldn't find any job and I didn't speak French. So it was the only job that I thought it was interesting enough to take, then I could travel. But it's the worst 4 years of my life. It's very hard. People don't know how hard it is to be a flight attendant. People think they are good looking, but they work hard, because when you are up very high, everything is much more heavy. People are much more stressed. When they're afraid, they get more aggressive. Most of the pilot at that time was male, and they are the most, what are called, macho I ever met. And the flight attendant, some of them really allowed them to, because, you know, you choose the job, and in a way, this is some of the dream, and they accept it. When I came first time, and I was in trainee, and I was in Zurich, It was actually a Swiss company, Swissair, and it was Corsair. And in Zurich was a captain from Zurich. And he came in, and when you were trainee, you all knew, so he looked at me, he didn't say hello. He said, coffee black without milk and sugar. And I look at him and say, I'm sorry, how are you? What is it? I didn't understand your German English. And he say, he look at me, coffee, black. And he repeated slowly, like I'm so stupid. And I look at him and say, well. And then the flight, at the cabins, he look at me and he say, you need to understand this culture. That was one thing. And then I was looking at this guy and say, well, I have to teach him how to behave. So, and you know, raising up in Denmark, in a country with a female that are very strong, there's no bullshit. So I just went into the cabin with a coffee for him. And it was Nescafe at that time. So I put like just a little bit of water and 3 bags of coffee. And I stirred up and he drank it, and it wasn't take off yet. And he spit the coffee all over And it took like 20 minutes to clean up that, and we were delayed. And he just looked at me. And he said to the medic cabin, I will never see her in here again. And I say, you know what? Not all flight attendants can make coffee. And I became famous. So all the captains, they don't dare to ask me for coffee or service anymore. And this is, you know, it's like, okay, I can serve for you, but it's not the way you want it. But you know, that in a way to show, I mean, somebody has to do it. Of course, other girls have been doing different things, but I think it's like, you know, no way. And I found it very hard to work there because you have to look good. You have to have, there's a uniform. You need to wear a short dress, very short, very tight. And then the demand is that always lipsticks and makeup on. And I hate makeup. I hate to have lipstick. And you see, I have big lips. And my problem is that actually when I put lipstick, my lips become very big. So I told the medic cabin I cannot have lipstick. And she said, well, you have to. And I said, well, you have to go with me. And I can put it on and you can see what happened. And I was in the business class. And I put lipstick like the other girl, you know, red color. And within 5 minutes, and you see how the world is made at that time, of thinking of woman and, you know, flight attendant. I got like 10 visit cards. And I can't say, you can meet me at this is my hotel number. And that's the way it is. And since then, she say, well, you are the only one who allowed not to wear lipstick. But it's very difficult. And how can you change it? Either you can say, stop, I don't want to be a part of this, or you can do your way, or you can, but you still have to earn money. So yes, I work hard, very hard, and I deliver what I should, but I never accept really the way they think of a female. And that's when I decided, when I go everywhere in Europe, and I ate through all Europe, that I will never work for somebody else. I want to be my own boss. I want to work in a country that has respect for women. And I knew after living in the United States, in Vietnam, and in France, that the only place for me was actually Scandinavian and Denmark. We have everything. We have the most perfect world. And if everybody say, why are we really happy? Yes, look, and you can make it.
Thanks so much to An Lee, who let us hang out in her garden for a long afternoon, opened up her home, and shared her story with us. Thanks so much to Lars Hennerskov Eriksson, our Munchies Denmark editor, and to Phil Domachowski, our incredible podcast producer. Copenhagen, the wonderland of foraged food and open-faced fish sandwiches that you are, I'm very sad to leave you. Be sure to check back in 2 weeks when we'll be back in the U.S. and gearing up for the holidays. So until then, get all of our delicious Munchies content over at munchies.tv. Hit us up at Munchies on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook too. And if you like the show, show us some love by rating it on iTunes, because it actually does help us out. I'm Helen Holliman. I'll see y'all soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.